RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 91 with guest Stephen Rose. Recorded Monday, December 29th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the guys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
This is Richard Campbell. You're listening to Run As Radio, and with me as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, everybody. Richard, how are you?
I am good, sir. Welcome to a new year.
Yeah, happy new year.
And we've been battling the weather and all that good stuff. It's been fun to try and record.
Yeah, it's been pretty interesting, hasn't it? Yeah, I think we're both consumers of generator power and snow-related power outages. We know all about that, don't we?
Yeah, trying to keep things operational enough to keep producing shows right through the winter season.
2008, it was definitely a very interesting year in many, many ways, and ended it on an interesting note. So I'm personally kind of looking forward to 2009 and a lot of great news.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how 2009 actually shakes out between the economy and everything else that's going on.
There was some really interesting news actually just kicking off 2009 right at the start here.
Absolutely. Well, that brings us to our guest, doesn't it? My good friend, Stephen Rose. Stephen Rose is Senior Community Manager for Windows Client IT Pro. Before joining Microsoft, he spent 10 years as an IT consultant working with Fortune 500 companies, as well as a speaker at IT and developer conferences worldwide. He is an MCSE and MCT, as well as a two-time MVP, but you can't be any of those things and work for Microsoft.
I can still be an MCSE and MCT. I just can't be an MVP anymore.
Okay. Right. So you still got your certifications. You just aren't a valuable professional anymore.
Absolutely. How are you guys? I haven't seen you guys since Tech Ed in Barcelona, I think was the last time I caught up with you guys.
That's right.
All together. That was good fun, too. We got some great interviews there. I think we just finished publishing them all. We got so many.
It was a great show.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that conferences are rock solid through the 2009 as well. I think it's a challenging time, and we're talking about what Tech Ed in the U.S. is going to be like, what Tech Ed in Europe is going to be like, as they're going to be different this time.
Absolutely. Well, Tech Ed in the U.S. is going to be in Los Angeles this year, and Tech Ed EMEA is going to be in Berlin.
Right.
So that'll be fun for everybody. It'll be good, and we're looking forward to more speaker idol on both sides of the ocean.
You bet. And I know for sure Tech Ed US has gone back to 1 week. Is Tech Ed EMEA going to go back to 1 week as well?
I believe so. I think that will also be one jam-packed week. So,
oh, man.
It'll be great.
Yeah, they'll be really, really busy. It's fun when they get tight like that, but it'll be a challenge to get all the sessions in that we want to get.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, Steve, since you've been on the show in the past when you were a consultant, but now you've crossed over to Microsoft, what are you doing for Microsoft?
I am the, as you said, the senior community manager, and basically my role is I work with a portion of TechNet known as Springboard. We're at Microsoft.com/Springboard, and we are a central location for resources for IT pros that are looking to work with XP, Vista, and now Windows 7. And what they've done is they have put everything from VRTs, virtual roundtables with people like Mark Rasinovich and Aaron Margosis and Chris Jackson there. We have tools. We have newsletters and blogs and white papers and demos and videos. And it's a group I've been working with for about a year before I came on board with Microsoft. I actually did some VRTs with them, worked with them at TechEd in Orlando last year. Where I also had a chance to work with you at Speaker Idol, and they're just an amazing group who make sure that once an IT pro has purchased an operating system or is in that pilot and development phase, that they have the tools they need to make the right decisions and really are able to maximize the operating systems that they're working with. So it's not a site that's selling anything. It's really a great resource site, and it puts everything in one location. So it's absolutely great. My role is to work with the IT pros worldwide and help to develop Springboard to make sure it's a tool that they can use, has the resources that they're looking for, and that we create good communication between them and Microsoft and back again.
So it strikes me that Springboard is very much like MSDN, except that Springboard's for IT pros versus MSDN is the developer network.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to Springboard, I'm really pointed at TechNet here, right?
It is. It's a portion of TechNet, but unlike TechNet where things are all over the place and, you know, you really have to search hard, know what you're looking for, Springboard really sort of puts together more of a portal saying, you know what, here's the latest information, here's our top forum posts, here's the latest blog postings, here's our newsletters, here's the latest tools. And we also break it down by product. So there's a tab for XP, there's a tab for Vista, and there's a tab for 7. And it walks you through the life cycle, whether you're in the decision phase, the piloting phase, the deploying phase, the managing phase. It puts all those tools in one place. So it really makes it very easy to find everything you're looking for rather than just searching TechNet for information. It's more of a guidance tool than as well as being a resource.
And like you said, wrapped around Windows. So if I'm looking for SQL Server, absolutely, I'm heading into TechNet as per usual. But for the folks that are dealing with Windows installations, this is the place to go.
Absolutely correct.
So on Wednesday evening, Steve Ballmer had a pretty important announcement.
Yes, he did. The CES just took place, and he announced at CES that the Windows 7 beta is now available. And that's what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about Windows 7, its availability, how to get it, how to download it, and you know, what to look for when you're starting to play with it and how to make the most out of the beta.
So this is a public beta. Anybody can have it?
Anybody can have it. The first 2 days, it's available to MSDN and TechNet Plus subscribers only. So they're going to be allowed to download it and get it first. It's one of those the privileges of membership, as they say.
Sure.
But starting Friday the 9th, anybody will be able to download it. There are going to be three locations. There is a public location, Microsoft.com/Win7. That's for consumers, or what we refer to as tech enthusiasts. They will be able to go to that webpage and log in there. For those of you that are IT pros, students, et cetera, we encourage you to go to springboard.com. That's Microsoft.com/springboard. You'll see the link to download the Windows 7 beta there. And for the developers that are listening in, MSDN will also have a link through their site. Once you go in, you will need your Windows Live ID. Your Windows Live ID then gets you into the download page. You'll be given your key there. So if you got a copy from somebody else, let's say that downloaded and it gave it to you on a DVD, that original download is only going to be good for 30 days. If you want to be able to register it, you will need to get a registration code. You will need to go through one of those three sites, get your registration code, and then your beta will be good for a much longer period of time. You'll be able to get support. And there's only going to be two support forums. The developer forum is on MSDN, and we're going to have the other forum that people will be able to ask any questions, get support, will be the only guidance, really, for people that have questions, problems, want more information, et cetera, not only through Springboard, where we have a dedicated page dedicated to Windows 7 demos, white papers, et cetera, but also the only forum for IT pros, for students, for tech enthusiasts, if they have questions or issues. The download is an ISO, so you will be downloading an ISO, and you'll need to burn it into a CD-ROM from there, or you can install it as a VHD image. Win 7 supports VHD booting, or you can just put it into a VHD, you know, into a virtual machine and run it virtually if you choose to do so.
And it's awesome to think about this brand new OS running as in a virtual environment. Plus, I've heard it's also, and yeah, I know you're a virtualization fan, it's also a great host OS for virtualization.
Yes, absolutely. There's a lot of better together stuff that goes with Windows 7. And one of the great things, and you know, is, you know, you're not just working with WinImage files now, you can work with VHD files. And really, when you put Windows 7 together with Server, you know, with the new version of Server, whether using Server 2003 R2 or even more so Server 2008, there's really some amazing new features that are going to be involved for users and things that they can do now that they couldn't do just a few years ago and certainly cannot do or couldn't do if they were running XP as their base desktop.
So, and we heard great things about Windows 7 at the PDC, which again, admittedly, it's a developers conference, but I think it was one of the first times we really got a chance to sort of see the sort of pre-bits. They actually gave a version, a sort of CTP version of Windows 7 to all of the attendees. I was stunned with how stable this very early version of Windows 7 was.
Yeah, that was what's referred to as the M build. The build for the beta is called Build 7000. There's a lot of differences with it. I know that some people went out and downloaded hack kits to Blue Badge to unlock features in the M build and stuff like that. And the first thing that I'm going to say, folks, is, you know, if you downloaded it from BitTorrent or something like that, download the actual real beta from Microsoft.
Right.
You know, there's not going to be any issues or bugs or rootkits or malware or anything along that line. We don't track it. You know, we don't follow who you are and put stuff in your machine, anything along that line. But it really, really is. And I've had a chance to play with the M build and the 7000 build. And the three or four things that really strike me is how quickly it boots up, how fast it comes out of sleep and hibernation is absolutely tremendous. From the time that you log in to your desktop is up and ready to go is really great. The preview windows, the fact that you can now have 8 or 9 tabs opened in IE8 and be able to see all those tabs and preview them and move through them in real time without needing a very large or impressive graphics card in a laptop is really a great thing. And they've done a lot of work to do software optimization of the graphics, hardware optimization of the graphics, and really sort of put that together. So it's very smooth. It's very fast. I've been running it as my only desktop OS for about 3 months now through the various beta builds, and it is very stable. It is very fast, and I'm very, very excited. And the main reason for that is the framework was already built. It's built on the Windows Vista framework. We've combined the tenets of the server OS and the desktop OS into one framework. So now it's taking what people like in Vista and the stability of that framework and making it better. That core architecture is still the same, which means that anybody who's made an investment in adopting in Windows Vista, testing and piloting and deploying, it's really going to pay off for them in a much smoother transition to Windows 7.
Now, we've certainly talked to Mark Manassi a fair bit about how it seems like Windows 7's come really quickly, and that it really strikes me as, like you said, it's built on the Vista framework. And so this is it's the XP of OS's, where Windows 2000 was that big sort of revolutionary ship where we consolidated the lines of the Win9X line and the NT line. And so we got a lot of plumbing done in 2000. And then XP, well, we made fun of it at first. Remember, we had the Fisher-Price interface on it? But
yes.
it became the OS. And I think one of the reasons we came to love XP is it's been around so long. I mean, 5 years with one OS. And now we have this big jump with Vista, which I think people have struggled with. And now Windows 7 seems like this is our reward for getting to Vista, was now we have the pretty, the clean, the perfect version.
I would agree with that. I think, you know, Vista had its share of issues. I think, one of the problems was not all the manufacturers developed Vista drivers. They took the XP drivers and tried to rework them to get them out quickly. And, you know, one of the first things, it's funny, Mark Rasinovich and I were chatting, and we both agreed that for a great Vista experience, if somebody takes a laptop that came with an OEM build back from, you know, pre-SP1, and wipes that machine and puts on a fresh copy of Windows Vista and then adds the latest drivers from the manufacturers, you really get a great performing, very, very fast machine. Problem is, a lot of people before SP1 jumped in, there was a lot of problems with drivers and application compatibility, and a lot of people got burnt and refused to go back and try it. They'd also spent so much time working with XP and making XP work and writing scripts and codes and all the various things that it takes to properly implement that, after all that time and work, they finally got it right. They didn't want to have to start doing that again. You know, what's nice is those people who did go to Vista is, you know, the image management tools and the processes are very much the same. The deployment tools are the same. Even the post-deployment desktop management is going to leverage all the same tools. So, you know, what we're telling people is if you're running XP and you want to skip Vista and go right to 7, you know, that's absolutely fine. But if your applications don't work in Vista, they're not going to work. They're most probably not going to work in Windows 7. If they work in Vista, because it's that same framework, except for some low-level code stuff like antivirus and things like that, it's also going to work in 7. So Vista becomes a great way for people, whether you're going to roll it out as a full OS, because let's face it, nobody went to the day Windows 7 comes out and goes to RTM, you're not going to roll out 20,000 desktops.
No.
You're probably going to do it with most people have done for 2,000 XP and wait for the first service pack. So,
but making a deployment to Vista really does set you up to move to 7 fairly painlessly.
Absolutely. It's going to put everything that you want in line. It's going to do a great job for that. And even if you don't want to completely roll out to it, using it as a test OS to start testing your applications now. You know, somebody was saying, well, you know, we're going to move to it. And I'm like, you know, there's a big difference between SAP working with Windows 7 and SAP being supported on Windows 7.
Right.
And those are very different. And a lot of IT pros are going to wait for that.
I'm going to wait for those sorts of things. So if what am I getting going to 7 from Vista then? That's the big distinguishing feature. I mean, we talked briefly there about the virtualization changes, but can you give us the big picture here of the jump for 7?
Sure. I mean, beyond the GUI, and most people are going to download this and they're going to play with the GUI for the first 7 days. You know, there's some great stuff. I love the fact that you can see all your wireless network and wired networks all in one location and, you know, all the various features. But it's really the under-the-hood features that I think most IT pros are going to come back and be very excited. The fact that we now have PowerShell integration built into Windows 7 is absolutely tremendous for management. And it's a GUI version, and it's a and it's a command line version as well in Windows 7.
And it's in there by default, so it's not like we have to push this out to our machines. If we have 7, we have PowerShell.
Absolutely correct. And what we find is there are some features on their own, like BitLocker to Go. BitLocker to Go is a great feature in Windows 7. BitLocker to Go enables you to put in through a group policy or locally, through a group policy, you can say anybody who plugs in a thumb drive or an external hard drive, they must encrypt it, and it forces encryption of that drive. When that drive goes into your own local machine, you put in a password, and now you're able to access the data. If it goes into someone else's machine, they can open it but not be able to copy, move, or do anything with the documents on that except open them up and read them. So, or require a password to even go that far. And you can force this as a group policy on your network, or by simply right-clicking any of those removable media, choose BitLocker to Go, encrypt that, and now you have an encrypted drive. And that's just one of those features that, you know, a lot of people are going to go, this is great. This is one of those things that we've been waiting for.
So the other side of this policy is this, that my machines won't accept a USB key that doesn't have that encryption on it. So I think we've eliminated that vector, that social vector of leaving USB keys laying on the ground in a parking lot because people pick them up and plug them into the machines.
Yeah, and there was that issue in England where the tax service lost something like 1 million or 2 million names of British subjects, and it was lost on a thumb drive. So now that thumb drives outsell, you know, even laptops, the fact that you can now force that level of encryption, make sure that those are secure, only work certain machines or create different levels of security, really starts to make a lot of sense. And especially now with external hard drives, things along that line. So now by utilizing BitLocker to actually encrypt the hard drive and BitLocker to Go to ensure encryption of all removable media, you're really creating a really nice secure platform. So it's taking what Vista had with BitLocker and building upon it and making it better.
Now, you mentioned really briefly, Stephen, the antivirus a few minutes ago. Can we run current antivirus programs on this release of 7, or how does that work for people that are maybe looking at downloading this and trying to use it?
There isn't any, although most people, and I've been able to, I've tested this on two machines, both a home machine running Vista Ultimate, which I upgraded, and a machine that I'm using at work that I did a clean upgrade. I was able to use the Avast antivirus without any problems with it.
Okay.
There were a few small issues in some recognition, but overall it wasn't a problem. But anybody who's going to be doing this upgrade, you really should not do your primary machine. You should have a second machine where you're installing it onto and playing with it like you would with any beta. Because the idea of the beta is to shake out bugs and problems and issues and give you a chance not only to test it and see how it's going to work with your environment, but to help Microsoft in making sure that when we get to a release candidate product that it's stable. So you may not have virus software on it, or you may be able to use some versions of Vista on it. I don't think anybody is releasing a Windows 7 virus software as of yet, although I wouldn't be surprised to see some pop-up or some patches for some maybe within a month or so after the beta.
Right, and making this a publicly available beta, Microsoft sort of making that move really opens up the opportunity for people who maybe have either had perceived or real notions of, you know, problems in Vista, for example, really have the opportunity to contribute, you know, to this future version of Windows and to help make it better so that when it is released in a final version, you know, they at least have some form of input into that.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people are going to be very impressed with the speed and stability of this. And again, a lot of that is really based upon how good, you know, that Vista platform has become and really allowing us to take something that was good and really take the advice from people on what they liked about Vista and what they didn't like UAC, and allow you to have multiple levels of UAC that you can either set through a group policy or locally to say, you know what, unless it's something like a rootkit or malware or some sort of virus that's trying to rewrite my OS, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to be installing software and uninstalling software. And unless it's something that's really going to mess with the framework, I should be pretty good. But if it is something, then let me know. Or keep it at the kind of at the current level, or completely, you know, turn that off where it's completely transparent in the background. So that was one of those big issues. People complained about UAC, and I agree. It was very black or white. It was either on or off, and very invasive or not invasive at all. And there really was no middle level. I'm running the UAC now, and I've only seen it pop up 3 or 4 times, and it was times when it was well needed, and I was glad to see that pop up happen.
Well, and I think that from an IT pro perspective, I'd always agitates me when we get these kinds of dialogues popping up to our users who actually don't know the correct answer. They're only looking for the button that makes it go away.
Yeah, or we start training people to say yes every time without, you know, you do that enough times. You know, it's like the old sales technique. If you get somebody to say yes 3 times, then you know you've made the sale. The flip side of that is that, you know, if you get somebody to say yes 3 times on UAC, then they're going to keep typing yes and clicking yes, I should say, without necessarily paying close attention to what it is they're saying yes or no to.
Absolutely. Or they just get freaked out and they're on the phone with their IT help desk every time it pops up, thinking that their computer is being invaded and data is being taken and they're being hacked every time that pops up. So no, I agree. I think there needed to be a matter of degrees. I think it was a great idea. And again, when that was designed, it was in the XP phase when all of a sudden a lot of these rootkits and malware and new viruses were coming out, and they were really hitting XP hard, and it was becoming a huge issue. That's when we saw Windows Defender and a lot of firewall tools come up. So that was almost sort of in a response to it. And I think now they've really found the good middle ground between having nothing in XP, having something that was maybe a little bit too controlling for certain users in Windows Vista, and really creating a best of both worlds scenario now for end users, both on a corporate end and in a home and consumer end.
So what other interface changes or application changes are taking place inside Windows 7 that might entice either XP or Vista people to take a look?
Well, I think from an IT pro standpoint, certainly something like Direct Access, which would, you know, will pretty much get rid of the need for most people to start having a separate VPN client. The fact that when, you know, if you've got an email open and there's a link to your intranet, you click it, you now launch your Cisco client or your Citrix client, you got to pull out a little ID card and type in the number and get it within 60 seconds and log in and do all that. Direct Access now allows you to seamlessly access all your network resources increases productivity in mobile users. And you're going to find that a lot of these features are really geared around mobile users. I was reading something the other day that laptops outsold desktops for the first time in U.S. sales history. And we're moving in that direction. And Vista started to address that. And I think with stuff like BitLocker, BitLocker to go with branch caching, which is a feature which allows content downloaded from file and web servers to be stored in a local branch so that it frees up network bandwidth. The fact that we've got, you know, those sort of features in there are really showing that move in the way that people are using computers and the way that both consumers and businesses really want to have access to all their data anywhere they go. A live mesh and the cloud computing piece is certainly a part of that. And I know that the Windows Live Services Wave 3 is a big part of that as well, between file sharing pieces, and the fact of integration of the calendars with Outlook and things like that, that we really want to be able to get our data anywhere, have access to it anywhere, but also have access to it securely.
So what should people expect? You know, you bring up things like the different live applications, Windows, you know, Live Mesh, or some of the others that are out there. Should we expect that those things will install and run under Windows 7, or is that something that, you know, we should look for in the future?
No, they are. I mean, what's great is IE8 is part of Windows 7, and there are, of course, features like, you know, in private browsing and things along that line, the phishing filters, which help to make the computer more secure. I love the in browsing, the in private browsing feature. I've downloaded the Windows Live Wave 3, and it's absolutely tremendous. The fact that I plugged in a digital camera, through my printer and devices, it found the digital camera and said, do you want to upload this to your Windows Live Spaces? Because I had already installed that. And I said, yes. And within a matter of seconds, the pictures went right from my camera right to the web. I chose who we're going to share those out. Within a matter of seconds, I was sharing out all my photos without having to download them locally and go through a lot of steps first. You know, I want to have a third-party app. It's all very seamlessly integrated. The Windows Message client, when you install it on Windows 7, when you're in your Start menu, just by putting your cursor over it, it's going to say, hey, what do you want your status to be? Do you want to sign in? Do you want to view your live profile? Do you want to go right to your inbox? It gives you all these various choices and changes the way that it works within the menus. So they built a lot of that integration into it. Live Mesh works beautifully. I have some Live Mesh folders that I've created and shared them out with people, and it just works so seamlessly. And it's just great because no matter what, whether I'm at my Vista PC or I'm at a Windows 7 PC, if I'm home or in the office, I really seem to have access to my data wherever I go. And I think that that's one of those great usability features behind the product.
And from a driver perspective, if it works with Vista, we should expect it to work with Windows 7?
It should. And so far, a lot of them, there are, of course, going to be some pieces of hardware which it may not recognize. But I've plugged in all sorts of thumb drives, external hard drives, digital cameras, things like that, and I have had no issues on it. I know one thing that they're still working with is the Windows Mobile phone piece. I don't know if, you know, how well that will be put together for beta. I don't know if that's being included in the beta, if they're saving that for a release candidate, but I know that is one piece they're updating and working with now to add more functionality to it than what they had in Vista to really sort of integrate that as part of the computer, you know, saving it along those lines. I have a picture I will automatically want on my computer. I'm using Live Mesh with my Windows mobile phone and using that as a way to take the pictures from my phone and put them right onto my PC without ever having to sync or connect that cable in any way, shape, or form.
So what about release candidates? What's the timeline look like here? We've got beta one. Are we going to have a couple more betas before we go to RCs?
Can't really talk about that at this point. So okay. Right now it's a public beta, and I think things will move quite quickly. I think it's a very, very stable product. I think people are going to be excited. I think we're going to have a lot of people that are going to download the beta and play with it, and I think we're going to get a lot of great information.
Great. Well, I mean, that's why you do a beta, right? Let's see how this affects other people. Because it's interesting to think this is a beta, so you don't be running this on a primary machine unless you're Stephen Rose, because apparently you are.
I like to live dangerously, and you know what? If I'm going to stand in front of a room full of people, I was just in Indiana last week speaking to about 300 users, and you know what? I feel that confident in the product and that good that I have no problem running it as my primary machine, and I think that that says a lot about our commitment to the product and how good it is and how good we really feel it is. Again, out there, you guys are going to play with it differently. You have different hardware. You might be a little harder on the beta than I am. We do recommend it, but again, I feel very confident running it on my primary machine, and I've been very comfortable. Let me also add, you're going to find the backup features in it for those of you doing it and backing up your data, that as you go through upgrades, you're going to see it takes all your data and moves it to a separate partition as you go through an upgrade, which is impressive. The backup feature is absolutely tremendous. One of the biggest updates over Vista is the fact you put an external hard drive, says, do you want to use this as backup? Does a really great job with it. Defragment is up. There's some really nice stuff that people are really going to enjoy and really be happy with.
Looking forward to seeing that. I know I tend to be on the bleeding edge and not pay a whole lot of attention to the please don't use this beta on your primary machine. I've done that for years, since Windows 95, I think, was the first Windows beta that I participated in. And you know, it's not without its hiccups, but you know, that's where you can really contribute information to improving the product prior to release.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're really sitting down and running it 8 hours a day, you find what works well for you and what doesn't. And I've installed beta products and had whole machines blue screen on me and crash and this and that. But I really believe in this product, and I get to stand in front of a lot of people at a lot of different conferences and talk about it. And if I'm not using it, you know, 8 hours a day, 5, 6, 7 days a week, and really feel comfortable with it, then it's very hard for me to stand in front of IT pros. And that's my job, and say, hey, this is great. I really believe it, and I think you're going to like it too without really having been there. So I have to practice what I preach, and that was one of my promises when I came on board, was to really stay true to that.
Well, my solution to the problem is always more computers. I have machines, you know, I look around the room and go, who's going to be my victim this time?
Yeah, I do that.
I think it'll go on workstation number 2.
There you go.
Yeah.
So one or two more quick features, as I know we're running out of time soon, but that are worth taking a look at as an IT pro is App Locker, a very simple way through a policy to choose which applications people can use rather than choosing which ones they can't.
Oh, interesting.
So you can say, you know what, everybody can install Adobe Acrobat Reader. and publish that. But no one, if iTunes isn't on the list, no one can install iTunes. So they've made it easier to choose what you can run versus what you can't run.
Right. So you say you just lock the machine down by default and add apps as you see fit.
Right, which makes sense. It's one of those things you're like, oh, that's pretty simple. So, yeah, you can enforce your application standardization within your organization a lot easier and eliminate those unwanted or unknown applications. So that way, even if it's something you don't know about, people can't install it. So
right.
It certainly makes it a lot easier.
You know what I want to know is, what about 32-bit and 64-bit story? What's going on with Windows 7 in that regard?
There will be a 32-bit and a 64-bit beta. It is a Windows 7 Ultimate Edition, and there is both a 32 and 64-bit beta. So you can choose which one you want to download and use either the 64-bit version or the 32 on your machine.
So it's not time yet. It's not the time to give up on 32-bit. You've one more.
No. I have my home laptop, my personal laptop is 64-bit, and I love it. I love how fast it is. I love how well it runs. My laptop at my office is a 32-bit machine, and you know what? I'm not seeing that massive speed difference that I did between the Vista 64-bit and the Vista 32-bit. It's really cut down the 7 a lot, but I think 64 is the way to go, but I think it's going to take folks a little bit longer to get in on the board, and I want to see more companies write apps to really take advantage of the 64-bit architecture.
True 64-bit apps,
true 64, really truly pulling 64 bits of data at a time rather than 32, and we really haven't seen enough of that. I think it's going to take a little while for everybody to invest the time and money in doing that, but I know the market share is going up and the machines are becoming a much higher availability.
Well, throwing my dev hat back on, we're seeing over and over again that there aren't that many scenarios where true 64-bit apps are necessary that Windows on Windows works so well that if you actually compile an app as 32-bit and mark it as 32-bit and run it under 64, it runs great.
Mm-hmm.
So on the .NET side of things, unless I really need the memory, I'm now going to 32-bit. The only thing that I see folks doing now is that they're no longer allowing their apps to compile as run on any. Which is the default. Normally, apps are compiled to run on any processor, which means if it has a 64-bit processor, which these days means pretty much everything, it tries to run in 64-bit mode, and bad things can happen in that scenario because they haven't been tested properly for it.
Yeah, I think 64-bit really got an eye-opener with SQL 64, and people all of a sudden saw dramatic speed increases
with
running a 64-bit chip and running SQL 64-bit over the 32, and I think that was the first time when people said, wow, this is a lot faster, and I'm able to do so much more with so much less.
But that is a scenario where we have an application that can use the memory.
Yeah.
The memory matters. And I also get a sense that folks running Exchange 7 in 64, it was a big difference. That just ticked the product up another level. Whether desktops are going to be in 64 is another question entirely. And I think, it's interesting to see that we're not forcing the issue yet.
Yeah, no, I'm curious to see if the next version of server that comes out will be 64-bit only or if there will be a 32. And, rumors seem to be that there'll be it will only be in 64. We'll have to see. What I do know is that the next version of server will be putting in IPv6 as the default IP scheme.
Right.
You will be able to go to 4, but we're trying to move people towards 6. And there's so many great features in Win 7 with Server 2008, where if you do, if you're using IPv6, there's really some amazing stuff that you can do, like direct access, like branch caching, the fact that you can do multicast and multi-stream transfers when you're, delivering out your images. There's really good stuff. And one of the things you're going to see on Springboard is some IPv6 instructional information and training and things like that we're going to start to do in the future.
Great.
Yeah.
Some of the new features really need IPv6 infrastructure to take advantage of, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. So there's some really good stuff. One of the things we encourage people to try out with Win 7 is the VHD boot feature where and you'll have to dig a little bit for this, and there'll be some good stuff on our forums about how you can boot from a VHD image on your Win 7 machine.
I'd like it was an ISO.
I'll see what I can do about that. I know that there are there might be some tools that might allow you to be able to do that. We'll have to see.
But yeah, I think it's a good thing to think that that this idea that we're going to be able to that this is becoming the norm, that we're going to be handing images of machines around and just firing them up as per normal.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. There's also another feature that's also great for mobile users. There's an offline file gather. and a feature where you can push out all your updates. Again, Server 2008 R2 and Windows 7, where someone's offline, as soon as they come online, it's going to force certain packages. Just some really, really great stuff as you guys start to dig into. And we've got a wide variety of instructional videos that we're walking through on everything from deployment, security, all of these features on Springboard for people that want to learn more and go in. There's some great resources on there. But as IT pros, there's so much stuff going, this is what I've been missing to manage my users out in the field. And I think that those mobile users especially are just going to be really, really excited with so many of the new assessment, planning, deployment, management, and delivery features when you put those two together. And IPv6 just makes it even better, better security, and features like direct access, which require IPv6, Server 2008, R2, and Win7 are one of those things that people are going to start to look at now and say, over the next 2-3 years, this is the direction I want to go, and I want to get rid of my, you know, multi-million-dollar Cisco VPN systems that I'm using and go to something that's simpler, faster, easier for all my users to use and to manage.
Well, I'm sure that that deployment could be a show in and of itself, and security could easily be a show in and of itself, so we'll look forward to diving into some of those topics in the near future.
No, absolutely, and you guys have been so great to both the developer community through .NET Rocks and through the IT Pro community with Run As, and I've been a guest on both your shows, that I wanted to make sure that on day of launch that you guys definitely had the information for your audience, that you could get it out. And Richard, you and I are friends, and I know Greg well, and want to make sure that you guys get out there. And you guys are such a great source of information out there. So I encourage all the users and listeners to listen to your other shows and check out our sites, because there's so much great information that you guys put out on a regular basis.
Thanks, Stephen. And so best site to go to if you're not a TechNet or MSDN subscriber is Microsoft.com/Windows7.
No, Microsoft.com. Yeah, if you're a consumer, if you're an IT pro, we want you to go to Microsoft.com/Springboard, which will take you to the TechNet site. And that's also where you'll find all the resources, videos, white papers, and all the stuff that we've been talking about today.
Right.
It's all going to be there for you. You'll see it right on the Windows 7 tab.
So that's
download
for the,
it today.
That's
today
for the IT pro audience, and then as the beta becomes fully public, we can send our regular mortal friends to Windows 7.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can go to either one.
Fantastic.
Thanks, Stephen.
Stephen Rose, thanks so
no
much
problem.
For coming on the show.
Thank you, guys.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.